What is up and welcome back to 24 Minutes of the Oscars, the podcast that takes a look at the 2024 Oscars 24 minutes at a time. I am Ethan Simi.
And I'm Ben Lawhorn. This week on the pod, we're figuring out if we've loved each other in a past life before, which we're pretty sure we have, as we talk about Celine Song's past lives.
Nora and Haesung, two deeply connected childhood friends, are wrested apart after Nora's family emigrates from South Korea. 20 years later, they are reunited for one fateful week as they confront notions of love and destiny. Ben, this is Best Picture number 10. After this pod wraps, we've officially done it. We have our second Oscar season in the bag here on this podcast. Yeah. I can't believe it because it seems like just yesterday I was like, yo, when are we talking Best Pictures? I can't wait to talk about Maestro. And that time has passed.
Thankfully,
I'm kind of sad.
Yes, I'm very glad. No. I'm glad the Maestro time has passed for sure. I feel like we've saved the best for last. This was, you know, my favorite movie of last year. So I'm very excited to talk about this movie.
Of course, as with all of our other Best Picture nominees, we have a wonderful guest joining us for this show. Film enthusiast, social media, film personality, Marta McFly, joining us to talk about Past Lives. Marta, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me, first of all. I am deeply honored. But yeah, I'm well. I love this movie. I'm happy to be here.
It's awesome. I'm very excited. I'm trying to like decipher all your criterions behind
you. I was doing the same, yes.
I was like, all right, I see Seven Samurai. Like, is that the yep. Jacques Demy set? Like,
yeah, what's
that? Yep. Nice. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. More encouragement to watch us on YouTube because then you get to partake in this fun little podcast activity throughout.
People listening have no idea what I'm talking about. Yeah.
But so. Of course, we have covered Past Lives before because this is an A24 movie. It came out prior to when we started the Oscars season here on the show. We talked about it in episode 96 of our pod. So if you want Ben and I's like first reactions, I'm pretty sure we like watched it opening night and recorded the next day. Mm-hmm. Then go check out that pod. Obviously, we've had a lot of time to sit with it, think about it, rewatch it. We're going to talk about Past Lives here in a minute. Marta, I'm curious, because we start all of our Oscar episodes this way. How do you feel about the Academy Awards? Are you excited for the Oscars? We're just mere like days away now, like a week away, essentially, from March 10th, the biggest night in Hollywood. How are you feeling?
Good. I mean, yeah, I of course I care about the Oscars. I think, I grew up watching them, right? We all did. But the thing is, as I get older now, I pay attention to them, sure, but I feel like I've been so frustrated over the years that I try not to let it affect me as much. So I see it more as like a fascinating look into trends and audience reactions and what everyone else seems to think versus like the discourse around the general public versus what the Academy has to say. So that's the main thing for me. I think it's a great opportunity for conversation.
Yeah. I'm super excited about the Oscars this year. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Past Lives is going to be able to pull off, unfortunately, but I think it'll still be fun to watch and just see what this behemoth that is Oppenheimer does to everybody else.
I, of course, very notably have been touting that I think Anatomy of a Fall is going to take home Best Original Screenplay.
Same.
Outside of Best Picture, Past Lives is nominated for Best Original Screenplay. Guys, I don't know. It might have a shot. I rewatched it last night and I was like, this is music right here. This everything about what is said in this film is purposeful and is so smart. Of course, listeners of the pod know Ben and I have deemed John Magaro as our sad boy, John Magaro.
Yeah.
We thought he should have been nominated for Best Supporting Actor, which, of course, we're going to talk about at the end of this show as well. There's a lot of things to cover here. We don't have any precursors, no reactions or anything. We finished that up last week with the Zone of Interest, with SAG. Marta, I'm curious. I'm going to ask you kind of a question on the fly here. Is there a big upset that you think is going to be coming this year at the Academy Awards? Because the closer we get, as Ben mentioned, we've got the behemoth that is Oppenheimer. What are we going to see that is going to surprise everybody on Academy Awards night?
I don't know. I mean, what if Gosling wins for Best Supporting Actor?
Ooh, wow.
I feel like that would be a shock. My money isn't on him, but if it was to happen, I think that would be scandalous.
Here's a question about that, because he is performing I'm Just Ken at the Oscars this year. Coming out with that information prior to the Oscars, and I believe it was actually announced during Oscar voting, which I think is very pivotal and key here. Does something like that help his chances with the Academy? People being like, oh, he's bought in. He's performing. He's taking this character to the biggest night in Hollywood. He's giving the people what they want. He's committing again. Maybe he is worthy of an Oscar. I don't, just throwing it out there. I don't know.
I wouldn't be mad about it. You know, I think it's a wonderful performance. I'm curious to see what happens. It feels like it's RDJ's obviously to lose, but Gosling, I don't think he'd be an unworthy winner by any means. Like, he gives a really good performance in that film.
Yeah, it's good. I mean,
look, that's how I feel.
I love Ryan Gosling. I just think I think we're. I don't want to like go on this crazy thing because like people are so sensitive when it comes to Barbie and like the Oscars and the Academy Awards and like being recognized. I genuinely think like Robert Downey Jr., Mark Ruffalo, Ryan Gosling. Like, I think we're just like in two different camps of like what we're doing here. But. With all that being said, Best Supporting Actor is actually the category that I personally would change the most out of like nominees, who I think is going to win. We're going to get to that at the very end of this show. Past Lives is nominated for two Oscars, like I mentioned, Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay. Does it have a shot at anything? Where is it in the Best Picture power rankings here, guys?
I mean, I'm going to preface this by first of all saying I adored Past Lives. I really did. I genuinely loved it. That being said, I think there are some better contenders in both categories. Like you were saying, Anatomy of a Fall. I think that may win over Past Lives. I really do.
It's got a lot of steam. It's been Justine Triet has been working the system and it's working well.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's unfortunately probably in the bottom tier of the 10, you know, as far as like the power rankings that you want to give it. It's won some stuff, you know. It won, you know, the Independent Spirit Awards, which is kind of cool. Directors Guild gave Celine Song the first feature film, but nothing that really translates over to the Academy Awards, unfortunately. So I'm glad it's getting some recognition. It's got tons of nominations, but it just doesn't seem to be taking home a whole lot.
You mentioned that first feature film. Where are we at? Because I know where I'm at on wanting the Academy to introduce a first feature film category. Obviously, notably last year at the Independent Spirit Awards, After Sun, Charlotte Wells ends up taking home the same award. And Paul Mescal gets nominated for an Academy Award. I think the Academy would benefit greatly, just supremely, from an award like this. Marta, do you think this would be a wise category to instill in the Academy?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also, I mean, what did they add this year? They added Best Achievement in Casting, right? So I don't think that it's far-fetched to say that this could be added, obviously not this year, but maybe next year, you know?
Yeah, give us that and stunts and a lot of us will be happy. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I think give us that, give us stunts, and give us Best Breakthrough Performance. I still want to see that because then, especially this year, you're talking about like Dominic Sessa, especially. I don't know the actress's name in Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And then Milo Machado from Anatomy of a Fall. Like people that just like aren't quite on the tier of like best, you know, another category, Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress. Yeah. But a way to recognize people for like, hey, you're a really good fucking actor. You show a lot of promise. You're gonna have a great career. I think that's really important. And I think if I'm the Academy, that's a very important message to send to young actors and actresses that are starring in their first feature films or their first blockbusters or whatever it may end up being, that I think is good for like an audience perspective as well, because someone wins an award for something like that. And then you're very interested. You get millions of people very interested in what they do next or whatever decision it is. I think that could be something really beneficial. So
a place to recognize what Greta Lee did too, I think, in this movie.
Absolutely.
And T.O.O., like, he was really fantastic. Like, on this rewatch, I really appreciated his performance even more. So yeah, for sure.
Yes. His performance is so much more nuanced than I remember it being. Even though I saw it like twice in the theaters, I was like, his facial expressions are incredible. Okay. I don't think it's going to win anything. I quickly want to say Best Score. Where did we go? What happened? It's not nominated for Best Original Score?
It's crazy.
It feels like it should be there for sure. But again, absolutely, it's just like up against the behemoth, you know, just be a nomination. But It's worthy of it.
Here's the interesting kind of forever fateful dichotomy of the Academy. They, of course, end up choosing a John Williams score over something like this, which, you know, mm-hmm. I think we don't really need to go into a lot of detail. I think that kind of speaks for itself, that they tend to go.
Got to pad those stats, man. Got to pad those stats.
With the old guard.
The rookie numbers, you know, bump them up.
Yeah, they really need to help our guy out. He needs those noms. It's tough. You know, it's tough. It's not like it was going to win, right? If it was nominated, it wasn't going to win anyway, yeah. But it still would have been nice to get three nominations. Okie dokie. Let's talk about Past Lives. Do you guys have any other Oscar Academy Awards thoughts before we dive into Past Lives?
I'm ready to dive.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of diving in, my wild take here is what if Annette Bening pulls it off for NIAID? What if they split?
We gotta stop.
Emma and Lily and everyone's
stop.
Just like,
we gotta stop.
Give it to Annette. She needs it. I think that'd be hilarious.
You think that would be funny? We're sitting there on Oscars night. You don't need to see it, Marta. You're okay.
But, I mean, she got enough like votes to get nominated, you know? So it's like people liked it, I guess. So I think it'd just be really funny if they're just like, Annette, let's give her, you know, we didn't do it for Glenn. Let's give it to Annette. So I don't know. I think that'd be funny.
Did they like her though? Or are they just like, man, we gotta help her try to get that award again.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, let's, pad those stats, bump those numbers up, you know?
God. It's not good, guys. This is not good. You can't speak something like that into existence, because what if it actually happens?
That's why I want it on the record. Blame. In case it happens, I want people to come back here and realize I called it.
And okay. Benning, wow. Best actress. Yeah, you probably got like 1,001 on that. You should put a few bucks down, man.
Yep.
Yeah, you could clean up. man, if that happens, I will FaceTime you and we will record that call, and that'll be like Patreon bonus content. We'll re-up the Patreon because that'll be insanely just unhinged material. okay, I think this is the quickest we've gotten into a film here through like our 10 best picture nominees. I think that does like speak to this film. We're just all very like kind of excited. I think there's a lot to dissect and a lot to talk about and a lot of things to go about. Marta, I'll start with you. I know you briefly mentioned you love this film. Any other general thoughts that you want to share about this before we do like a detailed breakdown?
I mean, I'm sure I'll blabber on about how much this movie means to me later on, because there's just so many elements that I'm like, oh my God, this hits really close to home. Maybe if it's not the exact same thing, but oh my God. And yeah, I mean, during this rewatch, I started crying, I think, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes in, because I knew it was going to happen. And same, I was just like buckets the entire time. So yeah, that was nice.
A little cry at home. Nothing wrong with that, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Ben, third rewatch before this pod?
This may have been the fourth one.
Wow.
Twice in theaters and then once at home before that. So yeah.
Okay. Still hits.
Still hits for me. You know what I mean? Like I love this movie. I think it's, for me, it's perfect. You know, to me, you were perfect. That's what this movie is for sure. So yeah, it still hit, like you said, just like the tears start coming. And I'm home alone. My partner's out of town. So it's just me and my dog, and my dog's worried about me. I'm like, no, it's fine. I'm just watching a movie. It's okay. So I loved it. I loved it though.
I think that's really, really funny, because I'll quickly go on a little bit of a divergent path. I watched Brokeback Mountain for the first time yesterday morning, and then I watched Past Lives at night. I just want to quickly say, don't ever fucking do that in your life. It's a terrible double feature. If I ran my own rep theater, we would definitely be doing that, because that would really ruin people. I watched Brokeback Mountain actually in my office, and one of my daughters came in towards the end, and she had noticed I had lots of like tears in my eyes, like waiting to be unleashed. She's like, why are you crying? What are you watching? And I was just like, it's about people who can't be together. All of this okay. And anyway, it was really, really sad. So I think that was funny that you mentioned your dog, because my kids are very much the same way. They're like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm just a movie, guys. It's okay. We're fine. Rewatched Past Lives for the third time last night, and rewatched it with my wife, actually. Incredible experience, because, of course, showing a movie like this to someone that is very, you know, she's my significant other. She's my partner. Mm-hmm. She's it. And so it kind of like completes the circle in terms of like what this movie means and does and what it holds. And of course, a lot of pressure on someone going into a movie like this because you're like, oh my God, like, what if they don't respond? Like, what if they don't feel the same way I feel? Because, you know, Ben, you and I, we gotta get on here all the time, and I'm just like, this movie wrecked me, and you're just like, I didn't connect for me. So, yeah. Like, it's possible, right? And so we're watching the movie. We get to really the final 10 minutes, of course, when the Uber shows up. We get the incredible, you know, everything that's happening in that scene. We'll talk about it. And the credits roll. Ben, I texted this to you. My wife immediately was like, is there a post-credit scene? Because she needed some kind of closure to know, like, what happened, which I think is hilarious. And she also just, like, stood up and just started truly crying to the point where, like, I could barely understand what she was saying. And she just, like, walked into the bathroom. And I was like, oh, my God. I hope you're okay. So she responded very well. Incredibly tragic film that I think it hits people differently, which I think is really interesting and powerful. I love this movie. Of course, Ben, you love this movie. Marty, you mentioned you love this movie. This was my second favorite movie of 2023. It still hits. It still holds. It's really incredible. Okay. I want to start the True Cinema with, of course, the people in the bar. First thing we hear is this couple mentioning, who do you think they are to each other? And then they kind of try to figure out who Haesung, Nora, and Arthur are to each other as we get this very slow kind of panning zoom into them. And they try to figure out what their relationship status is. And a very masterful, like, pseudo fourth wall break from Nora, from Greta Lee here. That, of course, very purposeful, intentful, meaningful. And I think even at this stage when I rewatch it, I was just like, oh my God, like, I get it. I know it. Like, I know where we're going. I know that it's not as simple as that. Like, you can't reduce to this question of, like, who do you think they are to each other? They're more than that. Like, it encompasses so much more than that. Marta, thoughts on this introduction scene?
I thought this was brilliant. I think it is just a perfect example of fooling the audience, because when I saw it for the first time, I just kind of knew, like, oh, Nora and Haesung clearly have a thing. I wasn't sure the first time I watched it who Arthur was, but immediately my mind was like, screw this guy. Like, I don't like this guy. And then obviously as the movie progresses, you start to really feel for Arthur, and those initial thoughts you have are just wiped away, for me at least. So yeah, I thought that was really clever to start it off that way.
The thing I find so interesting about this scene is you can watch any of the three of them and almost take away like a different kind of story or narrative.
Totally different narrative, yeah.
This time for me, I really focused on Arthur, and it's just like, it's hard not to watch Damagaro. I love him. But he gives such a great performance of just this whole, like, awkwardness of being the third wheel, but also being the most important person, you hope, you know, that's a Nora. So he's, like, wanting to be supportive, but he's just being completely iced out. And it's just it's such an interesting performance for him to give, having not been in that exact situation, but, you know, in situations where maybe you don't know anybody at the party and you're just kind of, like, hanging out. It's like, all right, let's read the room here. What do we got going on? That's kind of, Arthur's just like, all right, I'm just gonna sit here. We'll see. Maybe they'll address me at some point, but if not, I'm just gonna, like, stare at this bartender. It's a great, great opening. And like you said, the fourth wall break was fantastic.
Yeah. Of course, this scene is elaborated on towards the end of the film, and we'll kind of dissect that a bit more when we get there. I think now is a good time to kind of kick off the John Magaro conversation. For me, he is, like, the true binding, like, paste of this film. I think without him, of course, the narrative is much different. It does fall under what is quite brilliantly, like, from Celine's song, called out, talked about very clearly halfway through the film, of, like, he is the evil white foreigner who is interrupting fate and destiny of these lovers, of these, like, star-crossed lovers. And Marty, you mentioned, like, it's so easy to see that from minute one and just be like, this guy, why is he even with them? Just, like, let them be. Let them love each other. Like, dude, you gotta know when to give up. You gotta know when to fold in the towel. But the fact that he knows who he is to Nora. And more than that, he knows who Hae-sung is to Nora. And he knows that they're two different types of fulfilling relationships in two very starkly different ways. I think is very impressive from John Magaro. And Ben, you mentioned like his really weird ability just to sit there and look sad and just be like, oh, wow, you don't look like you're putting in a hard day at the office here on set, but you're acting your ass off because I can't imagine what you kind of have to unlock and what your gears have to do in your mind to like set up this scene for you mentally to be Arthur. Beautiful, beautiful entrance. Then the movie kind of kicks right into the past. 24 years earlier, I believe, is when it is. Their children, Hae-sung and Nora. And we just learn about their kind of youthful, idealation for each other and adoration. And Nora's mom, Hae-sung's mom, they kind of put them on a date together. And we learn that Nora's family is going to emigrate and they're going to go to Canada. And they're going to kind of leave each other behind. This is where we get the famed staircase scene. Of course, beautiful. I think it's really notable. My wife actually paused the movie here and was like, this reminds me of Parasite. And of course, two South Korean films, two very kind of stark imagery. But the fact that she's taking a movie that is a first movie for someone like Celine Song and being like, hey, it's like Parasite, a movie that is world renowned as the best of its kind, I think is saying something. She doesn't watch a ton of movies, so I think that means a lot coming from her. A gorgeous and beautiful visual representation of where we go narratively after this. Marta, stairs scene, what did you think?
I mean, the stair scene is just so impactful, right? The one scene though that stuck out to me a bit more, and I'm gonna hijack for a second, I apologize, is Nora's mom, what she says to Hae-sung's mom when they're on that date. She goes, if you leave something behind, you gain something too. And I'm not sure if you guys were gonna discuss that later on, but I just think that passing statement that she makes is so important to the story, because it's a statement that sticks with Nora into adulthood. And ultimately that question of what if that surrounds the movie isn't just romantic. It's also just life itself, coming to terms with your past. So I think that statement, that's the one in the past that really made an impact on me.
It's like you're reading my notes over here. You know, it's exactly what I was going to mention. No, it's perfect. Like, that's exactly what I was going to talk about too. Like, I think it's such a powerful scene, and I think we get some like visual symbolism of it. I noticed as well throughout the film, like there's one, I'm jumping to the next segment here just really quick, but you know, when they say goodbye to each other, the camera pans out her window, but like the sun flare really starts to like get super bright. And it's just like, oh, she left something behind, but like there's a bright future coming for her that she just doesn't know about yet. That's how I interpreted it. I could be super wrong, but I just thought that was really kind of interesting to show that visually. But having the mom say that as well, because, you know, the Hae-sung's mom's like, you guys are like a film director and an artist. Like, why do you need to move? You know, it's like there's opportunity in other places. But I love that scene and just how much we call back to that stuff later on, like when they first meet each other in New York, or, you know, the stairs later on at the end. Like, it's just it's used so well.
It does feel pretty rare that you get a script as eloquent and well thought out as something like this, where you're like 12 or 13 minutes into the movie and you're already like, whoa, that's a powerful statement. That is a guiding light for our characters, for ourselves, for like something to digest and break down. And you still have 90 minutes of the movie to go, which I think is really impressive and pretty wild. I just feel like everything about this kind of childhood stint, it is interestingly juxtaposed, I feel like, to when they start talking again through Skype and through technology, and when they're older, that montage, that amalgamation of scenes lasts much, much longer. That, at least it feels to me that it lasts much, much longer than these scenes that we get when they're children. And I think that purposeful nature to like keep this part of the story youthful and vibrant and something where it's like, oh, I am curious. Like, if she didn't leave that behind, like what mm-hmm. did her school look like? What would things have been for Haesung and Nora if they got to go on more than one, you know, mother ordained date? I think that is a very purposeful storytelling decision that I think works really, really well in this situation. I mentioned the Skyping, the calling over time. This is a great portal back into 2012 technology, which I truly like. Shout out Celine Song for going the distance on this one. Really impressive stuff. And, you know, I mean, they just start talking all the time. Like, it goes from being like so excited for this one meeting, and we evolve to, you know, Haesung going to school and calling her from the bus, and Nora calling her or calling Haesung from outside of the house and like doing other things and rushing to get home so she can make a call, calling him in bed, all of these types of situations that ultimately culminate in Nora asking Haesung to stop communicating, basically to stop talking and saying, I'm being too distracted. Instead of doing what I know that I need to do, I'm looking up flights to Seoul, and I can't go to Seoul right now. I have to be a writer. You can't come to America. You have to go to China for your language program. Marta, I'm curious, if you were in that situation, try to put yourself in those shoes for a brief moment. Do you think you have the willpower to call up Haesung and just being like, we can't do this anymore? I got to focus on my life.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I was devastated for him. Like, as soon as that phone call happened, I am just sobbing again, crying. It's hard, you know? And again, it just harks back to what Nora's mom said at the start of the film, right? But personally, would I have been able to stop talking? No. It's not
Ben,
happening.
Ben, what about you? Could you put the hammer? Could you put the kibosh on this relationship?
No, because like I'm at home, just like maybe this speaks to my fiscal responsibility, but I'm just like, open a credit card, buy a ticket, just go over there. Like, what do you mean you have to wait a year? Like, it's Greta Lee, get over there, dude. Like, what's your problem? You know, and vice versa. It's like, go back home, go visit Haesung. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That part always so frustrating to me. It's like, I don't understand what you guys are doing here. This doesn't make sense.
But isn't it so core, Nora? Like that's the decision we knew she was going to make, because Korea was not big enough to house her ambitions. Mm-hmm. Canada or Toronto, wherever she ends up living, is not big enough. She emigrates twice to get to New York, a city that mm-hmm. is big enough for her aspirations, is big enough for her to pursue a Pulitzer Prize or a Tony or whatever she wants to pursue, like she, you know, jokingly mentions. I think her self-awareness is something quite rarely seen, especially in movies like this, where the narrative is set up to allow our characters to fall deeply and more passionately, like in love with each other, if they can just get over this financial barrier or like, oh, just buy a plane ticket, just get there, it's okay. She's thinking much bigger picture, which I think is very interesting and is heartbreaking, because it's like, isn't that the right decision to like focus on being what she's always wanted to be?
And that's something that like the way she reassures Arthur later is just like, I'm not giving up my rehearsals for some dude, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just like, we get to insight on her. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. So this stuff was so important to her. Like that's, you know, I make the joke about the credit card, but it was probably just more like, she just wanted to focus on like what she was doing and her work and her rehearsals and her writings. Like that's why she couldn't go for a year. But we learn later on, it's like, yeah, she's very dedicated to what she's doing. And Arthur knows that about her.
Yeah. And I think Arthur loves that about her, which I think is very key and crucial to their relationship. Okay. Next on the list here, the writer's retreat. This is where Arthur comes into play. Gorgeous house, unbelievably beautiful home. Maybe it would be sweet to try to be a writer, go on a writer's retreat in this house because it looks really nice. And then maybe you meet the love of your life. Who knows? This is
like
her
reference
Arthur.
For Montauk too. It's like Eternal Sunshine. And so he watches that. She's like, what does he think Montauk is after watching that movie? It's insane.
It's a good reference. Any movie that references Eternal Sunshine is always a win. This is where Nora and Arthur meet. This is where Nora explains In Yoon for the very first time. Mm-hmm. We get in a very kind of melodic montage of seeing Heisung in China while she's describing Inyun to Arthur, which I think is very, a very smart visual juxtaposition to give us and an audio juxtaposition to give us as a viewer, and see what it really is. And essentially, if a couple gets married, they have 8,000 layers of Inyun. That seems like a lot. I'm married. It seems like 8,000 past lives, maybe a bit too many for me personally. I don't know if I've lived that many, but I respect it. Maybe I've done like 8. Who knows? What do you guys make of Inyun? Like, what do you make of like the idea of it? Because Nora then says, you know, it's usually something Koreans just say is to seduce somebody.
Yeah. That's the perfect cap for this whole scene. It's just like, we get this heartfelt moment of like, oh, it's this, it's that, like, here's everything that it means in our culture and blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. And then it's just like, actually, it's just something you say when you want to sleep with someone. So it's just like, yeah, it's kind of hilarious and it works. So yeah, I thought it was super funny. This whole sequence is really interesting. Just getting to meet each other and know each other, and just like, you know, you got the worst room, right? It's like, yeah, I kind of figured that. Like, it's fun to see their banter and their dynamic just right off the bat, that they have that. So super cool sequence here, these montage sequences, whatever, the Montauk montage, you know.
What'd you think, Marta?
I mean, to piggyback off what Ben said, I completely agree with everything. I also like how she does romanticize Inyun more to him than later on when she talks to Heisung, when she brings it up again. Because doesn't she tell Heisung later something about like, you could have been a rock, I could have been a bug on this rock or something. So it doesn't have to be even like, you could have been a rock, I guess. So yeah, no, I loved it. I thought that sequence with Arthur was fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting how she chooses when she chooses to kind of dive into it and believe it and talk about it and think about it. That scene that you mentioned at the end is, you know, at the bar, and they kind of playfully say, like, who were we to each other in a past life? Maybe we were a political marriage that was set up. Maybe we were like, you know, an under the radar marriage. Maybe we were like the, you know, people fleeing a king and a queen, and we ended up fleeing together. And maybe I was a branch. Maybe you were a bird that landed on that branch. So I think it's interesting how she decides to explain, express, and kind of go through that idea. Of course, this is like pivotal to the movie and to like the understanding of what a past life is and what past lives does really mean for this movie. And the one thing else I wanted to call out about this scene is when she mentions that it's something that is said to seduce somebody. She has to like nod or very, very like nuanced kind of facial expression to Arthur. Not once, but twice, to try to get him to kiss her, which I think is hilarious, because it's like she says it right to him of like, I'm seducing you. And then he still doesn't pick up on the hint, which I think is really, obviously it's really cute. But like, I wonder if that means much more to Nora and like a partner and like their, maybe not respect for her, but like their kind of trepidation of like, maybe I'm not enough for this person, which of course is a theme that's brought up later in the film. Next on the list, the immigration check, visiting Nora's family in Toronto. I think this is a brilliant way to just drop a fucking bomb on what is happening in the movie. And we cut to 12 years later and they're coming back. They're checking in with customs, giving their passports, being asked all of these normal questions, which are asked at customs, which I think is just really genius. And we find out that they're married and that they're two writers and they live in New York City together now. And they were visiting Nora's family. Marta, what did you think the first time that you saw this scene and realized that they got married?
I was floored. I was also floored by the customs guy. I don't know. I always get uncomfortable when I have to cross customs, even if I like didn't do anything wrong. I'm just like, I hate this. So you have the shock of the fact that they got married, but then I also wasn't sure. These are initial thoughts, not during my rewatch. But I also wasn't sure, like, are they happy together? Because you couldn't really gauge their expressions that much. Again, because it was an exchange with at customs, right? So they're all, everybody's deadpan, right? So it's not until the end of that scene do you realize, when she smiles, I'm pretty sure they both smile and walk away, that I'm like, oh, they are happy, this worked out for her. And it just came as a shock to me.
What about you, Ben? I'm curious, the first time you watched the movie, what did you think? Do you remember?
I was cheering on the inside for my boy John Magaro. I was like, you did it.
You fucking did it.
You nailed it down, man. You did it. You punched up. You got Nora. That's fantastic. I thought it's such an interesting, just to, you know, reiterate what Marta said, like, anytime you go through customs, it's like, you're quite literally, like, you know, being questioned and interrogated, you know. It's like, I don't know, man. I just, like, I went on vacation. Like, I didn't do anything. And it's hard not to feel defensive and stuff. And I think this scene plays really well, though.
Yeah. I think the first time I felt similar to you, Ben, I was just like, man, my guy figured it out. He took the hint, which is great. It is wild that we jumped 12 years. So I think that's part of the brilliance of, like, we do see some wedding photos later on, and we kind of realize, like, they got married sooner than later because of green card status and things like this that get revealed, which I think is very smart. But at that moment in time, all of that's up in the air and questionable. We don't really know. Marta, I like what you called out about, we can't tell how they necessarily feel about each other, because I think when they're asked their relationship to one another, or how do they know each other, Arthur says that they're married, and he smiles and he looks at Nora, and I don't believe, if I'm remembering correctly, I don't believe Nora really does anything. I think we're kind of like, oh, interesting. Does Nora feel like she had to do this? Does she feel like this was it? This is what she settled on, right? This is where she landed. So I think that's very interesting. The other thing to call out, which I think is a very, like, funny writer Celine song thing to do, is the only question they get asked twice is, what do you do? And he says, we're writers. And then the custom guy has to ask again, and he goes, we're writers, which I think is really, really funny, because it's completely unbelievable / they live in New York, so of course they're writers. Like, what else would they be doing? But I think this scene is brilliant, and it is very startling, shocking, and a great lead in to, like, the second act of, okay, we got to, like, refigure out our bearings and, like, where are we going? Because compared to 30 minutes ago, when we were watching Nora as a child, we are in a much different space. And we have to navigate that now, which I think is a lot to take in.
One thing I thought was really interesting about this is I watched the making of behind the scenes featurette thing on this movie after watching it. It was so interesting to me because Celine Song talks a little bit about why that scene is in there, obviously to reveal the marriage, but also because Celine Song herself, obviously this is kind of based on her life, but she said, like, her life has literally been split up into three parts. It had been 12 years in Seoul, 12 years in Canada, 12 years in New York. So it's like, when you go through immigration and someone says, like, are you coming home? It's like, what's home at that point? Like, you spent the equal amount of time in all these places. Like, what is your nationality? How does that matter and stuff? And I just thought that was really, really interesting as well, because that carries over to this character of Nora, of just like, what is home? You know, you've been divided up three equal amounts of these places. Like, are you Korean? Are you Korean Canadian? Are you now Korean American? Are you Canadian American? Like, what are you exactly? How do you classify that? Do you have to? And I just thought it was a really interesting point that she made during that behind the scenes. So that's why I wanted to talk about this scene today, because I thought it was just a really powerful way to get that across.
Nora mentions too, later on in the movie, like, Haesung makes her feel more Korean. Arthur makes her feel more American, which a very interesting point to bring up to that, Ben. Like, it is a continual journey of self evaluation and, like, self-identity for Nora throughout the entire film. Kind of snuck really deep within this huge veil of, like, this is a, you know, a faded love story. Very interesting stuff. Next on the list, Haesung comes to New York. It's raining, guys. It was raining in New York when he came.
What a great scene, though, when he gets, like, so trying to shit on by his friends. It's like, oh, this is horrible news, man. It's raining the whole time. It's like, it's so fun seeing him get, like, made fun of by his group of buds. I liked all those scenes that we got with them, all of them hanging out together and drinking their soju and stuff like that. Like that was
they're so such great boys. Like those are the boys you want. Cause they're like, tonight we drink until we die. And you're just like, oh, Project X spinoff. Like, here we go. Yeah. Things are going to get wild. Which I think is incredible. He mentions he's going to New York on vacation. And that's what Nora understands. That's what he tells his friends. Of course, not on vacation. How do you think that was a way for him to try to like to justify in his head, like, oh, I'll just it's for vacation. Like, I'll happen to see Nora, but I've always wanted to see New York. Like, it's vacation. Is that the only way he can, I guess, like confidently tell himself that's okay to go do this?
It feels like it. It feels like that's his workaround, because if it doesn't work out with Nora, then he's still got to, you know, just like, oh yeah, I was just on vacation. Like, it was cool to see her, whatever. That's it. Without putting all of his eggs in the basket of just like, I'm only going to see Nora. I think he's kind of lying to himself, obviously. Mm-hmm. And Nora even brings that up later. You know, it's like, oh, he's here to see me for sure. But yeah, it just feels kind of like the workaround, the excuse that you're able to give your friends, like, oh yeah, I'm going on vacation. I'll happen to see her, but I'm doing it for this reason.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. I think that, I mean, Nora's the one that got away for him, right? Yeah. Like, he lost his chance when he was a kid. He didn't say bye to her properly at those steps. And then he lost her again 12 years later. And at this point, he knows that she's married. Yes, he does. So I don't know. I think clearly he wants to confirm to himself something, anything to do with Nora at this point. And that's why he goes. And it is a matter of her being the one that got away. And I mean, she clearly doesn't have that same level of connection that he does to her. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think the stairs are a very interesting visual that lead us kind of to this point, because Haesung's path that he takes to the left is kind of this much more steady and solitary walking path that really doesn't ascend. Nora takes the stairs that are pretty much a straight ascension. And this is how their lives end up shaking out 24 years later, right? Nora is happily married. She's a writer. She's living in New York. She's kind of living her dream. She's achieving the things that she wants to. Haesung, not so much. Like, things not going great with his girlfriend. Like, not going good. He's overthinking marriage. He's not making enough money, you know, for his kind of cultural specifications for marriage. He's still very much hung up on Nora. He still goes out to drink with his guys that he was doing 12 years ago. He still lives with his parents. Like, I think he's very, you know, from what I can understand about the film, he's very Korean in that affect. Mm-hmm. And Nora has evolved from that. And I think that's very, very interesting. And that kind of takes us to Haesung coming to New York and realizing that he is, in fact, still very, very much hung up on Nora. I know when they meet, and we can kind of talk about that before it slips my mind, I really want to give a shout out again to Arthur in the scene where Nora comes home from meeting Haesung. My guy's just fucking lounging. He's playing PlayStation. He's chilling. I'm curious what game he's playing. He does not really strike me as like a Call of Duty guy. He's probably much more as like an open world. Like, he's probably, you know, he's probably like a Red Dead Redemption guy.
Maybe he likes a game.
Overcooked.
You know, like,
yeah.
Who knows? Who knows?
Oh, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Something like that. Drinking his soda, drinking his beer, maybe. And when Nora comes home and sits next to him and she says, I was right. He's here for me. He does engage, but like, he also is just like, I'm just here as a sounding board. I'm just here as a support person. Mm-hmm. And that this is who I am. Like, I'm just a husband. I'm just a guy. I just play PlayStation. Like, I just think that is very authentic to Arthur and to like how he interacts in that scene with her, because her world has kind of just been shattered. He is still living his normal life and doesn't really know how to support quite yet on how things are going. The first time Nora and Haesung meet, they say wow like 17 times, which I thought was really, really cute. Any other thoughts on when they meet and when Haesung comes to New York?
I love the call. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Marta, please.
No. Oh, no. Go ahead. Oh, sure. No, I was just going to add a little aside that I'm sure both of you know, but for listeners, the fact that Greta Lee or Celine Song, sorry, she decided to keep all three of our leads separated on set or during production, I guess, until they all meet for the first time.
I did not know that. That is incredible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So then all of their emotions could, you know, be more significant, more impactful. So maybe that's why they said, wow, 17 times, because seriously, wow. So,
yeah.
Holy shit. That's incredible. I literally didn't know that. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Just Owen Wilson's all around.
Yeah. I just think it's a great scene, and that little quick flashback we get to them as kids, you know, is pretty cool too. I don't know. I love the scene. I think it's so well done, just to meet each other and taking that all in.
Yeah. Of course, then we go hanging out at the carousel.
Beautiful.
Very, very smart, very astute visual kind of analogy of these two children that are adults now and figuring out how to navigate one another and who they are to each other and what that means. It is a beautiful scene that, for me, I can never quite, like, I always want to pick the very specific things that they say to each other. And in doing that, like, I overload my brain. So I'm always just like, this scene is perfect. And I never have like the right things of like, oh, they said this and they said that. Because I think it really washes over me. Like, I think I'm so entranced by them, like, coming to this moment and to this point, that it is really something special to watch, because they're at two very different places and they're trying to figure out how to, like, slowly scoot towards one another. And, like, I think from Haesung's perspective, he's trying to figure out, like, is this gonna go, like, where does this go, what does this mean, like, because I know she's married and I don't live here, and, like, what does this mean? And I think from Nora's perspective too, like, she's just trying to figure out, what do I do? Like, are we friends now? And if we are, what does that mean? And how do we traverse that? I think it's a beautiful scene.
Yeah, it's so good. It gives me the slightest hint of Before Sunrise when they're in that listening booth and they're like kind of like looking at each other, but like just keep missing each other as they're doing that. I don't know if there's anything to that other than just like, I love that scene as well. You know, it's just like, oh, this like, will they, won't they kind of thing that happens here. And if nothing else, just like the framing of the shot is beautiful, just with the carousel going on behind them as they're just like lounging on the steps. I love the scene, even the stuff before when they're, you know, with the skyline in the background and walking and talking about like his life and all that kind of stuff. Like all this first meet is so well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think what's important about the carousel scene in particular is what they don't say. And I think it really speaks to the performances of both of them, because so much is done with their eyes. Haesung, whenever he looks at Nora, you can just see so much longing and heartbreak, even all of these things. And then he'll look away and then Nora will look at him. And what Ben was saying, she's just trying to figure out what to do. Or that's how it seems. She's trying to figure out her own emotions. She's trying to figure out his emotions. And all of that is conveyed in this short scene without needing to verbalize it. So I think that's beautiful.
When they're walking and kind of making their way to all of these different points that they end up talking about, and the fact that they mentioned that Arthur doesn't fuck around, which I think is hilarious. Shout out Sad Boy John McGarrow again. There's couples around them everywhere. There's couples kissing, there's couples hugging, there's couples embracing, couples taking pictures. It is a very interesting and fascinating use of like the space around them to convey different modes of love and different ways that love presents itself physically. And I think for me, it opens up questions of like, I wonder, like, what's that couple's story? What's that couple's story? Where, like, what does that mean to them? Because the story that we're so engrossed in is so dynamic. And I'm, you know, I think I interpret that as Celine Song's kind of push to be like, look, everybody is different. Every single relationship possesses little things that just don't amount to the other one. So I think there's a lot to note there for sure. Okay, we've come to my favorite part of the movie. I know I'm revealing my true Sandman very early, but that's okay. It's not really a secret because I did it, 15 weeks ago, 16 weeks ago, the movie came out. This is a conversation of bed. I know we didn't mention Arthur wanting chicken wings, which I thought was hilarious. And why I bring that scene up is not only because it's funny, but also because I feel like I distinctly remember when Past Lives was kind of going through the Twitter sphere, like the film Twitter sphere of like people loving it one week and then not loving it the next week. This scene was kind of used as an expression. John Magaro kind of being in this fetal position on top of Nora, and Nora being in this much more like kind of masculine physical position, and him really bracing her for confidence and love and comfort. And I think that his physical acting in that scene in particular, I know this is kind of like earlier in the movie, but in that scene in particular is very telling of his relationship with Nora and like his comfortability and what Nora brings to his life. And I say that because this conversation in bed is where Arthur says, you know, you make my world bigger. I'm just wondering if I do the same for you. And of course, another notable quote is when he mentions that she dreams in Korean. She dreams in a language that he can't understand. And there's a part of her that he'll never get to explore and never get to unlock. This scene is fucking wild. And if I just like watch this clip on YouTube, I will just like, I will melt and it will cease to function for the rest of the day. I think this is really, really impressive filmmaking and impressive acting from both John Magar and Greta Lee in this.
The line, like, we might have the same, and we probably did when we first went over this movie too, but the whole line of like, you make my world bigger, I just hope I do the same, was like, damn, that's like,
yeah,
that's, I could just picture Celine Song writing that and just be like, fuck yeah, this is the line of
the
movie.
She's like, I hit it, yeah.
Like, I did it, it's time for drinks, I wrote the line of the movie, here we go. I love that whole sequence, and just like the vulnerability that Arthur shows throughout this whole scene as well, and just like the point blankness he talks about, like their relationship. He's like, what if there had been another guy in Montauk? What if someone else had read the books he read, watched the movies he read? Like, are we just here because we found each other attractive and then you needed a green card? Like, he really just like cuts to the bone with this stuff. It's like, shit, man. Like, you have been thinking about this quite a bit, you know, like this isn't just like off the top of your head right now. This feels like something that's been racing through your mind for a while. And then now you can't probably help but feel vulnerable, maybe not defensive, but you know, with Hey Sung coming, you're just like, am I the right person? You know, and there's that whole sequence of like, oh, this is funny because I'm the bad guy in this story. Like, I'm the white American husband who's like keeping you. Like, he's just, I don't know, he's just our divine sad boy, you know, and he's perfect in this scene. I love it.
Yeah. What's interesting about this scene as well is, Ben, what you just brought up, how he does say that, we like the same books. They have the same interests, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting because what does she actually have in common with Hae Sung?
Yeah.
Truly, besides their background, their shared background in childhood, we never actually get to know if they have any shared interests or, you know, if they were together, what would their days look like, you know? Because with Arthur, they're both writers, they both like the same things. They've built a life that they have together. So it's just an interesting contrast between the two men.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I think that's like the power of, you know, maybe memories in the past versus like the power of reality. And like, what is easier to fantasize, obviously, and figure out what things might have been. I think that's a really interesting thing to call out. Next on the list, I have taking the ferry around the Statue of Liberty. Hae Sung gets noticeably more comfortable around Nora. His body language changes. Mm-hmm. He gets very kind of much more flow of like taking pictures and posing and doing an activity that Nora and Arthur have never done, which I think is pretty key and pretty critical. And then the three of them go out for pasta and drinks. We'll save that. Any thoughts on the Statue of Liberty? Because the pasta and the drinks, of course, there's kind of a lot to talk about there and a lot to break down. Mm-hmm.
Just awesome cinematography, which this movie has in abundance. I feel like it's just, I don't know. I don't have much smart stuff to say about it. Like, it's a great scene. Like you said, it's fun to see them even just like in the line to get on the ferry, and he like gives her his sandwich and whatever. It's like, oh, here, take this. Like, he's just also a sweetheart as well. You can't like, that's the thing, is like, you like everybody in this movie. There isn't necessarily an antagonist in this film. Like, it's just like, it's three good people and you just want whatever's going to be best. But yeah, this whole sequence, I think it leads in perfectly to where we wrap up the evening.
Mm-hmm. I don't have much to add either. Well, I guess kind of the fact that when they're in public, especially on that ferry, you can tell again that there's more people around them kissing, couples kissing, right? Yeah, so that would just be another thing that I would add, is just this continuation of what we're already seeing from their previous hangouts, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Cool ferry ride. I've been on it. Pretty fun. It is pretty legit. And they in the movie, they had nicer weather than I did. So I'm always a little bit jealous when I watch that scene. Three of them go out for pasta and drinks. Can we talk about Haesung and Arthur meeting for the first time? Because on my rewatch last night, this moment in particular really struck me, because Arthur takes in, he's obviously trying to take in almost 25 years worth of a relationship fast enough to like talk to him and to not make things weird and awkward and strange. And his facial expressions, his body composition, what he does in that scene to take in meeting Haesung for the very first time, I can only imagine he's like, wow, this is a beautiful man with gorgeous hair. He's very tall and he speaks Korean. And like, I get it. Like, I understand why Nora sees something here. And then he proceeds to speak in Korean to Haesung. Haesung speaks English back to him. Cutest little exchange from these two guys that I just think is really adorable. Asks if he wants to go eat. Nora has to correct Arthur. I think there's so many like little nuanced things that work so well in the scene. They end up going to get pasta. Nora and Haesung sit next to each other. Arthur sits on the other side of the table. And I know I'm kind of blowing by a lot of stuff. Anything to say?
I just love the way Haesung is like, what do you want to eat? He's like, pasta. Like, all right, cool, pasta. And let's do it. Like, this is the place for that. Arthur and Haesung have the best meet cute of the whole movie. It's just like the two of them. He's like, all right, like, so you like my wife, you guys, you know, it's just like trying to process all that kind of stuff. And still being hospitable, which is like, I'll do my best to speak in Korean to welcome you, make you feel comfortable. Again, just another W for our divine boy, John Magaro. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's also important that we get so many scenes, or not so many. It happens twice, I think, up until this point, where we get to hear Arthur speak Korean. It happens in bed, and it happens here again. But Nora tells Haesung at one point, oh, his Korean's awful. But then we see it's not awful at all, right? Yeah. So it makes me wonder in the final scene, or right before the final scene, which we'll get into, how much can he understand?
Yeah.
Right?
Because that's very interesting.
100%.
During this rewatch, I actually got the vibe that he understood a lot more than I initially thought he did.
And he does make it a point to tell Nora he's learning Korean because he wants to be able to converse with her and understand how she dreams. Yeah, maybe he leads on to Nora that he's much dimmer when it comes to speaking Korean than he actually is. I think that's interesting. I think that's an interesting like kind of little like a naughty kind of twinge to this movie, because you're like, oh, what if he heard most of that? And like, what does he think? Like, I've never processed that before. Even last night, I was just like, it's just all over his head. But now that you mention that, I don't know. I didn't.
The reason why I bring that up is I lived in Spain for a year, and I would do the exact same thing. I'd pretend that I didn't speak a lick of Spanish, but then you just pick up on a lot of stuff. So it's a good tactic.
Wow, I'm with you too. Yeah, I think I talked about that on our episode, because I lived in Brazil for a while, and the same exact thing where you just look like a white guy, like they're not going to understand. And so you hear people talk about you, and you're like, all right, cool, got it. got it. All right.
You know, just like,
yeah. And so that's why I wondered that too on that watch. It's like, man, he kept it really cool. But even if it's not like fluent, you know, the words of just like husband or us or whatever, you know, like you could like pick apart those things like, oh, they're talking about them being together, like in whatever context it is. I feel like he knew more than he let on for sure.
Okay. So they go out to drinks. This kind of brings us full circle to the very introduction scene. And they start with a conversation really with the three of them that evolves into just Nora and Haesung, and things kind of go in that direction, and they end up speaking exclusively Korean to one another. We get a little bit more in depth about Haesung and his past, his military career and things like that, which I think are pretty interesting. And so this is the moment we had mentioned earlier where Nora and Haesung kind of get into Inyeon and what they are to each other still. And Haesung's pretty like forthright with his emotions and like how he feels to Nora, and is like, I'm here in New York with you, but also your husband. And like this, I have been brought here, and this is kind of fate and how it's supposed to be. Nora then goes away. We get just the two of them. And I, again, like Haesung continues to be the sweetest guy, because he's like, I'm sorry that we spoke in Korean. We won't do that anymore. And I just cannot, even saying that, like, I just cannot imagine the burden on Haesung's heart to just be like, I only want to talk to Nora in Korean. Also, like, I'm a terrible person for wanting to do that. And we did that. And, like, I'm excluding a key part of her life and, like, who she loves. And this is where we get this interchange between Arthur and Haesung and their Inyeon, which I think is really funny and cute again. Arthur picks up the bill. Shout out. Just a class guy.
Love it.
Incredible fucking stuff at the bar. I don't have anything else to add about the bar. You guys want to say anything else?
I think this is just a standout scene for Arthur. So much happens that you're like, Arthur, you are the best. I love you, Arthur. Like you said, he picks up the bill. Also, if we're going to pretend that maybe he could have contributed to that conversation, he chose not to.
Yeah.
So he actively chose to sit there and let them have their moment, because he knew that was important to his wife. And I think that just speaks volumes to who Arthur is as a person.
I'm not going to pit Arthur against Haesung. I'm not going to ask you who's the better guy, but I thought about it. I thought it crossed my mind.
I literally have nothing to add. Like, everything she said was spot on. This is perfect.
Okay, waiting for the Uber. This is kind of our final scene. Gorgeous wander down the sidewalk. It's a very will they won't they situation. They almost do something. They almost embrace. They almost kiss. They almost, who knows? Haesung gradually turns his body towards hers, which I think is just brutal to watch in Lifetime, because we know the Uber's coming. I'm like, you got to act faster, guy, if you're trying to make this happen. And the Uber shows up, and they hug. And this is where Haesung says, maybe this is a past life, and maybe we're something to one another in a different life. And I'll see you then, which I think is very key and crucial. Nora walks back. Brilliant sound design with her stepping on the metal, the metal grates here going back. And Arthur is waiting on the steps smoking, and she breaks, and she breaks down. And I don't know if the movie works maybe at all if she doesn't do this. If she doesn't have this emotional resonance to this decision that she's just had to make and sit through, and less so that Arthur has had to sit and go through as well, then it just doesn't hold that same amount of power. We say, Haesung, drive out of the city. And that's kind of that. And we're left big balls of tears of like, that must really suck if you're Nora. I can't imagine being in those shoes.
Dude, the slow turn from Haesung is just like glacial.
Yeah, it's just it is.
Oh my God. And it's just kind of like, what's going to happen this time? You know, even though this is like the fourth time we watch, it's like, are they going to kiss? Or like, what's going to happen? You know, but that first time watching it was just, my heart was racing. Like, what's going to happen here? How are they going to wrap this up? But yeah, this movie, I don't think works nearly as well without this final scene here. Like, this is such a powerful exclamation point on this film, and just her reconnecting with Arthur and going inside, like, it's a perfect ending in my eyes.
Mm-hmm. This is my true cinema moment. I have a lot to say about this. This was my favorite scene. Ethan, as you were saying, there's that final wide tracking shot. It's just one shot, right? Mm-hmm. And I think this is so important because it harks back to the steps. Haesung was on the left, Nora was on the right. So Nora and Haesung walk from her apartment all the way towards the left, where they wait for his Uber, which kind of signifies her leaving him in her past, right? And then she's in the same shot, just walking back to the present, collapsing into Arthur's arms. That broke me. And even before then, how the camera just lingers on them before their Uber arrives, nothing happens, what you guys both said. I just thought that was so beautiful. I love that approach. You don't know what's going to happen. And I just think it's impactful, and in a weird way, while it's heartbreaking, it's also hopeful, because she's leaving her past behind. She's crying, but she's also at the same time coming to terms with her future when she collapses in Arthur's arms. And I just think that's sublime.
What do you think happens 12 years later? Do you think this is closure for Nora? Does she accept it as closure?
I think so.
That's my read on it. I hope that's what happened. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, also Haesung says in the bar, he says something like, you leave. You're a person who leaves. Yeah. That's what you do, right? And the ending just solidifies that, in my opinion.
That's a great call out, because to Haesung, Nora is a person that leaves, but to Arthur, Nora is a person that stays, which I think is really critical of the film as well. I think this is closure for Nora, and I think that's why she breaks down, is because she knows the mystery might be gone. She knows what came of that what could have been, and this is what it was. So that was probably the most confusing sentence I've ever said in my life, or probably the most brilliant. I'm not sure. Gorgeous movie. Okay, Marta, you've done your true cinema. I've done mine. It's Arthur in bed. Ben, true cinema?
I mean, it's got to be Arthur in bed. Like, that's the best for me. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, I love it.
Love it. Okay, while we're talking about Arthur, let's move on to Best Supporting Actor race for the Oscars. This is our last category that we're covering, obviously, for the Academy Awards. We've covered 10 other categories, which I think is pretty impressive so far, along with the Best Picture race. Now, here's what we've got. For nominees, we've got Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things, Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, and Ryan Gosling for Barbie. This is interesting to me. Marta, where are you at on the Best Supporting Actor race? Who do you think is going to win? Who do you think has a number two possible upset shot? I don't know.
This is a really interesting category this year, because I can understand why everybody's nominated. Who will win? I honestly think it'll either go to Robert Downey Jr. or Robert De Niro. My personal bet would be Robert De Niro as my first pick, then Robert Downey Jr. I still haven't seen American Fiction, so I'm gonna try and do that very soon, but I can't comment on it. But in terms of who I would have nominated, who's not on this list, I mean, I'm pretty happy with the nominations. I agree with you guys that the kid from Anatomy of a Fall should have maybe been on there. Same with Charles Melton from May, December. That performance left a huge impact on me, and I think he was incredible. So,
yeah. That's tough. It's tough. It's tough. I'm trying to think about it in live time. It's tough. Ben, winner, second place. Any people you'd mix,
I feel like RDJ
out?
Has it locked in. I don't know what second place is, but I think for me, this is a very Ben selection here. Honestly, like, you could put in all the brothers and the dad from Iron Claw.
I knew
for
you
me.
Were going
like,
Iron Claw.
Fuck yeah, dude. Like, give me Jeremy Allen White. Give me Harris Dickinson. You know, they both did a great job. Holt McElhinney, right? I forget. I'm screwing up his last name, but the dad, like, he's also fantastic. I would have loved to see any of them get recognized, and my feelings on Zac Efron are well noted on this pod. So.
I agree. I just watched The Iron Claw the other day, so that's why it wasn't in my mind for the previous year, but yes, I agree.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned the Iron Claw, which I had for some reason forgot about.
Same.
This is tough. This is a tougher. I think it's Robert Downey Jr. for the win. I do. I think he's been winning the precursors. He's been making Robert Downey Jr., you know, speeches. He's been doing the thing. He's been talking to people at these events. I think he's going to do it. I think it is one of those situations. I know you mentioned Annette Bening earlier, like as a joke, but I think Robert Downey Jr. is actually kind of prestige to be in this spot of like, okay, we can finally give an Oscar to RDJ. Like this is it. We've done it. And I think the Academy obviously feels good when they can do that.
They wanted to reward him for Doolittle, but it was just like, they couldn't do it.
Too
so
soon,
it's like,
yeah.
Let's wait for something else. Whatever.
Gotta wait for the next project.
Yeah.
I think he wins. But if this is my category, and this is where I really stumble, because I do think Robert Downey Jr. gets in still. I want John Magaro nominated for Past Lives. Mm-hmm. I want Milo Machado Grainer nominated for Anatomy of a Fall. That's the little boy in Anatomy of a Fall. I want Jeremy Allen White nominated for The Iron Claw. Mm-hmm. I've got one more spot left, and I guess I'm torn, but I guess I give it to Ryan Gosling, not because I don't think he does an Oscar-worthy job, but it's hard because for me it feels more like a nomination of like societal, you know, recognition of like Barbie's big. We should nominate a Barbie performance. So I think that would be my five, but that means Mark Ruffalo, Robert De Niro, and Sterling K. Brown don't get in, which a little insane to be like, hey, Robert De Niro, you really put in the work on this really great Scorsese epic. Just not good enough, my guy. So sorry about that. I think that's insane. But again, like, I just feel like it was a year of much more nuanced performances in smaller films that I think it could have gone in that direction. But I do think Robert Downey Jr. is gonna take this one home. Okay. Any other Best Supporting Actor thoughts? Any closing thoughts on Past Lives? Anything come to you while I was monologuing?
Well, I guess we should. I'm curious. Do you guys believe in it, Inyan?
It's a great question. I wasn't ready to be asked it today.
Fair enough.
I don't know. Have to go there. Yeah, I think it's kind of an interesting thing to think about, whether, you know, it's like Inyan versus fate or, you know, whatever. Like there's so many ways to go back and just see how you're connected to the people you have in your lives these days and what brought you there, stuff like that. I think maybe overall I'd say I believe in it, whether it's under that exact phrase or not, but yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I would agree with that.
I think I believe in it as well. I think Ben and I definitely have some version of Inyan, or else there's no way we'd be able to do a podcast together. So
that's true. We're doing this in every past life. We're podcasting.
This is just one of many past lives where we're just getting to be better podcasters. Hopefully we're not on the early iterations. Hopefully we're on the latter ones here. Yeah, I do think so. And like Ben said, like whether you call it fate or destiny or like whatever you call it, I do notably hold on to what Nora said about even if strangers brush up against each other, that is some form of Inyan because something brought them there to the same moment in time and space where their clothes touched. And I think that's powerful. I think that's a little bit outside of like fate. Like, oh, you know, this was just destiny that like I ended up running into you here. I think that's a little bit different and a little bit more nuanced and a little bit like more granular, which I think is pretty powerful. But no, I wasn't ready to answer that question. So I appreciate you answering it or asking it.
What are your feelings on it, Marta?
Well, I actually like what Ethan said about the brushing up with the clothes. I mean, that all just reminds me of deja vu.
Yeah.
But then, but then that makes me think of like things like The Matrix, and then my mind will explode.
You're off on the other way. Yeah,
exactly. But I think I do believe in it. It just relates more so to that sort of, I guess, cosmic or universal blind trust, where everything happens for a reason, as cheesy as it sounds. I think there is some truth to that. I guess I do.
Nice.
Right on. Well, I choose to believe we all knew each other in a past life. Whether we were birds and branches, who knows? But, you know, whatever the case, I'm sure it happened. Okay, Marta, thank you so much for being on this podcast. Thank you so much for talking about Past Lives. Thanks for putting up with Ben and I talking about Past Lives.
Yeah.
But especially me, just like rambling not only about John Magaro, but about like every little thing about Past Lives. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being here. If people want to find more of you, where can they find you at?
Well, first of all, I just want to reiterate again, thank you so much for having me. Second of all, I can't believe I didn't put my handles next to my name over here. Yeah. But if you want to find me, you can find me. If you want to find my writing, because I work as a film journalist, my website is Marta, MartaDJO.com. And then as for socials, it's Marta.McFly on Instagram. Marta.McFly on TikTok. Okay. And on Letterboxd, it's just Marta McFly, no periods. So nice. There you go.
Definitely worth the follow on all platforms. I know you recently went through a TikTok debacle, so I'm glad that you're back. Definitely follow Marta on TikTok for great content there. Next week, Ben, final predictions. You ready, brother?
No, not at all. I'm not ready whatsoever. The more we talk about this stuff, the more I'm like, I don't know, maybe Annette Bening could pull it off. Who knows? We'll see.
But isn't that the genius of hosting the Oscars in March? Is that we have a steamroller like Oppenheimer and you get 4 days away and you're like, maybe I've been wrong for three months. And maybe actually something else will win.
It's crazy to think about. I have no
idea. It's a wild life that we live here.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing what awards, if any, Past Lives wins at the Academy Awards. If you guys think it's going to take any, let us know. We're on Twitter and Instagram at 24 minutes of A24. We're also on YouTube. You can watch all of our beautiful faces and you can see Marta's Criterion collection behind her as we talk throughout this movie. Follow us and we appreciate all of your support. I am Ben Lawhorn.
And I am Ethan Simi. You guys make my world so much bigger. I'm wondering if I do the same for you.